maximum 15. Were they marrying men who were all 20 or 18 or 16? No, they were marrying people in their 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s. Building on this, I ask the question that when you're telling me they're marrying people of this age, I want to ask a fundamental question about a lady who a Christian reveres. Mary, mother of Jesus. When did the Lord decide to breathe his spirit into her? Because if you're not going to say that Joseph is a pedophile, because you're going to attack the Prophet Muhammad, you're saying Prophet Muhammad is a pedophile. Well, if I ask you about Joseph, you say to me, well, Joseph entered upon Mary, maybe he was in his 50s or 60s. I said, no problem. Say it's not Joseph. When did the Lord decide to breathe his spirit into Mary? When she was 12? The Lord didn't think that there's a possibility that this 12-year-old can't handle the most important figure in mankind's history? How old was Mary? 12, according to Catholicism? 12 years old. Did you once find an accusation that Joseph is a pedophile because he was way older than her? Or did you ever find anyone questioning the Lord for breathing his spirit into a 12-year-old? Why didn't you find the questioning? Because it was normal in that society that when someone reaches adolescence, the option is there to marry them. Some families know their daughters may be ready. Other families say, no way our daughters are ready. Impossible. They're not mature enough. There is no way. You weren't obligatorily forced to marry. But you find that there were cultures where it was the norm. When a Christian, number one, comes and attacks the Holy Prophet, the first reply is what? Is that when Mary took in the Holy Spirit, Mary was 12. The Lord didn't find a problem with a 12-year-old carrying the most important child in human history. Number one. Number two, those people who come and accuse the Holy Prophet of being a pedophile, I can name you a number of kings in history who consummated a marriage when their wife was extremely young. Go and study Richard II, Edward I, Edward II, the Henrys who ruled this country. Never once do you find them being accused of being a pedophile. Go and study their wives. Read about Isabella, read about Eleanor, read about the other Isabella of Angoulême. How old were they? 10? 11? 10? 11? Did anyone come and say this person's a pedophile for what he's done? No. These were princesses who were ready to be courted. And therefore, because they were princesses who were ready to be courted, they were to be what? They were to be honored in their societies, that they married the king of their time. You ask, how old was the king? Say, some cases 35, some cases 45. But these daughters were different from any other daughters. Isabella, Eleanor, they were courted in the best of families, and therefore they were able to get married. That's number two. Number three, and something of the utmost importance in this area, which needs to be examined properly. What is it? Is that the Holy Prophet, very clearly, when a person comes and says that the Holy Prophet is a man who is a pedophile, did the Holy Prophet come to bring misery for young Muslim woman or Arabian woman, or did he come to reform the rights of young Arabian woman? When the Holy Prophet came to Arabian society, was he a man who came and said that, you know, these girls who are being buried alive, keep burying them alive? Or was he a man who said that this girl who's being buried alive, on the day of judgment, she will ask, why am I being buried alive? This was a man who came to reform the rights of the woman from being buried alive. The Arabs used to say, this woman is of no use to us. This was a man who allowed a woman to inherit, not be inherited. This was a man who gave rights to the wife in a marriage. And what better way to show the rights of a wife in a marriage than by you acting it in your own marriages? Isn't it? Then number four, was it something frowned upon in Arabian society? As in Arabian society at the time, did you have people saying, oh my God, I can't believe it. Muhammad's married someone who's 10 years of age. Imam Shafi'i narrates, when I went to Yemen, and Imam Shafi'i is how many years after Rasulullah? Imam Shafi'i is, let's say, 150 years after the Prophet. Imam Shafi'i says, I went to Yemen, I saw a lady who was a grandmother at the age of 21. How old? At the age of 21 in Yemeni society. There was a lady who was a grandmother. This lady who was a grandmother had got married at the age of 10, had had her child got married and had another child. you find that it was not something unusual. In Yemen, you didn't have anyone going around saying, oh my God, this is so unusual, the person who must have done it is a pedophile. No, it was normal in that Yemeni society, in that culture, there was no one who was frowning upon such a marriage at all. In that culture, it was seen as something completely normal. Take it a step further. Did Aisha ever once turn around and complain that that man has treated me abysmally in life? That man has ruined my life. That man is the worst of men who gives me no rights whatsoever. Because you'd expect if a man has got this ferocious attitude of pedophilia. What is pedophilia? Pedophilia is you don't just lust on one girl. You lust on many young girls. You want to kill and destroy the lives of these young girls. You yourself are ill. You yourself are sick. Did Aisha ever turn around and say, this man treated me abysmally? This man doesn't give me any rights. On the contrary, every word of her is a praise of the Holy Prophet. She herself, every word of her, she praises his patience with her. She praises his humility with her. Never once do you find Aisha turning around and saying, you know that man who married me? He ruined my life. She said, on the contrary, that man who married me is the greatest man to have ever lived on this earth. You would think someone who's been obstructed in their life would never want to see the face of such a man again. Someone would want to turn around and say, this is the man who caused me dishonor. And my father, Abu Bakr, has ruined my life for allowing me to marry. No, on the contrary. Abu Bakr, the father, gave consent. In pedophilia, you don't get such thing where a father gives consent. In pedophilia, a father's life is ruined when this psychopath comes and destroys his child's life. Whereas Abu Bakr, if he ever heard that Aisha was attacking Rasulullah, he would be angered. Take this a step further. You think Aisha is like any normal young girl? You think Aisha is a normal young girl, 10 years old? No one had as much opinionated, no one was as opinionated or as abrupt with their opinions in the history of Islam as Aisha, the wife of Rasulullah. Aisha can take you to the river and bring you back thirsty if she wants. You think you're talking to any 10-year-old? You're talking to a lady who in her 9 years with Rasulullah virtually put Islam around her finger. You think you're talking to someone young? Go and dissect Aisha, daughter of Abu Bakr. Dissect her 9 years with Rasulullah. That's young? There are certain 10-year-olds who you could tell, timid, immature. There are some, in one sentence, you could be 40 years older than them, she'll put you down like this. They vary in terms of their house, in terms of their upbringing, in terms of their culture that surrounds them. This was the Aisha who told Hafsa, tell me, what's the secret? What's he told you? When the Quran said, one wife tells the other a secret, Surah 66 verse 3. This was the Aisha who told Hafsa, you know what, when the man goes to visit Zainab again, let's tell him that his breath doesn't smell nice, so he doesn't visit her house and drink that drink again. This was the Aisha who told the Prophet, why do you spend so much time with Ali ibn Abi Talib? Why don't you spend that time with me? This was the Aisha who told the Prophet, why do you always remember Khadija? Why don't you remember me? Aren't I your most beloved wife? You think you're talking to any 10-year-old? You're talking to a 10-year-old. If she wants to, she can control every house in the religion of Islam in Medina at that time. When we talk of Rasulullah marrying a 10-year-old, you'd think that this is a timid 10-year-old who has no say at all in her life. This was someone who, without a doubt, had the ability to run a whole house by herself. To the extent she'd tell the Prophet, why do you visit all those wives? Why don't you just come to my house? I'll run the house for you. You find, therefore, when you take each of these reasons on board, you realize there is no need for a person to have to be apologetic about Rasulullah marrying someone who's 10 years of age. Yes, there's a possibility that Rasulullah, the acceptance for marriage was at the age of 10 for Aisha. But the actual consummation, when they came together, may have been later. That there's a possibility. But there is still no need for a person to have to beg, friend, and defend everyone by saying that, no, my Prophet is not that type. On the contrary, Rasulullah, you find those who praise Rasulullah, if you read the works of people like Gandhi, if you read Guru Nanak, if you read the Seventh-day Adventist Christians who are alive until today, they could have, many of them could have easily pointed and said, Muhammad, how could he be with a 9-year-old? Many of them said, a man with the morals of Muhammad, how can you question anything he does? You find that Rasulullah, was he looking for a lustful intention behind this marriage with Aisha? No. Rasulullah's most beloved wife all his life was Khadija. By his nature, he was monogamous. 25 years of age, he married Khadija. He remained with her for 26 years. A man of lust or desire should get married in his prime to many women. From the age of 25 until the age of 51, Khadija was everything for him in life. After Khadija died, then he went on to marry the other wives. Therefore, you find on the next step on this issue, those who come and say, no way, my Prophet would never marry someone so young. I tell them, well, then how are you meant to explain Ali ibn Abi Talib's marriage to Fatima al-Zahra? Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. How old was Imam Ali when he married Fatima al-Zahra? 25, let's say. And how old was Fatima al-Zahra? 10. You find anyone in the school of Ahlul Bayt having to defend Ali ibn Abi Talib? No. We are proud that we know how the Lady of Light is, because she's been brought up in a household of honor and dignity. And we know Amir al-Mu'mineen has been brought up in a household of honor and dignity. I could easily turn around and say, no, make Fatima's age older, I beg you. I don't want Imam Ali to be seen that he's 20. There are certain social conditions which differ from society to society. There are social norms which differ from society to society. Fatima al-Zahra may get married at 10. Even go a step further. Sayyida Zainab, when she got married, Sayyida Zainab was a couple of years older than her mother when she got married. Not more. So I have to now defend Sayyida Zainab? The point is, there's no need to be apologetic. What there is first an understanding of the conditions in Arabia. Secondly, not only in Arabia, go and study Jewish society, Christian society, it was a norm. There was nothing which was frowned upon. Now someone asked the question that today in our society, because there was a story of a man in Somalia, he was 112 years old, he married a 13-year-old. MashaAllah. 112 marries a 13-year-old. They asked him why. He said, Rasulullah married Aisha. What do you mean Rasulullah married Aisha? You're 112, you're marrying a 13-year-old? As in, honestly, you look at this situation, can I take this example in my life and say, well, because Rasulullah was 54 and Aisha was 10, I'm going to do the same. No, on the contrary. Rasulullah says that you two have to be compatible with each other. You can get married. If there are manners, you can get married. Also, reflect on the society within which you're living and respect the laws of your land. Respect the laws of your land. All our scholars say, if the laws of this land say that you cannot marry someone at that age, then you can't turn around and say, well, you know what, I'll do it in secret, but no one will know. I have to respect the laws of the land. Like those Muslims in Yemen and in Medina and in Mecca respected the laws of their land, there was no one saying there's a problem with marrying a 10-year-old. Today in the UK, if the age of consent, let's say, is 18 or 21, I have to respect the laws of the land. And if the age of consent is 60 in America, I have to respect. I can't just say, oh, because my prophet married someone else, I'm going to. No. You have to honor the laws of your land. You want to live by those laws? There are countries you can go and stay in. There are countries which may accept this. But when you are in a country like this, you can't abuse an example just for your own liking. Therefore, what do you find? You found that likewise Imam al-Jawad, when Imam al-Jawad had to marry the daughter of Ma'mun, the agreement for the marriage, Imam al-Jawad was how old when Ma'mun forced him to agree to marry his daughter? How old was Imam al-Jawad? 9. And al-Ma'mun's daughter was how old? 9. But the consummation of the marriage was later. Likewise, there is no harm in saying that Rasulullah may have been accepted for the marriage of Aisha 10, but the consummation of the marriage may have been later. But truly, without a doubt, Rasulullah with Khadija, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen with Fatima, these were without a doubt the two greatest marriages in the history of this religion. As in, these were marriages which taught us the principles of how to live together, of how to honor each other, of how to bring each other towards the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How a husband has to be clothing for his wife, and the wife has to be clothing for the husband. A husband has to protect his wife, and the wife has to protect her husband. And you did not see this more clearly than the wives of the companions of Imam al-Hussein on the 10th of Muharram. Sometimes people ask the question, why did these wives come on the 10th of Muharram? Why did Imam al-Hussein bring his wives? Why did Imam bring his daughters? It's because Imam al-Hussein knew this religion would remain alive through the woman of the religion. It's these ladies who will protect my message. It's these ladies who will honor this message. The number of wives that were at Karbala was phenomenal. You had Zainab, wife of Abdullah ibn Ja'far. You had, for example, Daylam, the wife of Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. You had, for example, the wife of Wahab al-Kalbi. You had Rabab, the wife of Imam al-Hussein. Many wives were present at Karbala. Each one of them had a different role. But two wives in particular, their stories are different, but their intentions were the same by the end of the 10th of Muharram. The first of them was Daylam, the wife of Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. Zuhair ibn al-Qayn originally was on the side of Uthman, not Imam Ali. Zuhair ibn al-Qayn was an Uthmani, he wasn't an Alawi. He used to support Uthman ahead of Imam Ali. Zuhair was returning from Hajj. While he was returning, Imam al-Hussein was returning from Hajj or going towards Kufa. Their tents were at the same place. Zuhair was in his tent, Imam al-Hussein was in his tent. Zuhair was sitting in his tent. The narration mentions his wife looked at him. She said to him, Zuhair, you look nervous. What's wrong? He said to her, no, there is nothing. It's just that, there's no problem, but I'm thinking about it now. Imam al-Hussein wanted Zuhair on his side because he knew Zuhair ibn al-Qayn, politically, the facts had not come to him. Imam al-Hussein knew at the same time Zuhair ibn al-Qayn was a man of honor and a man of dignity. So Imam al-Hussein, what did he do? He wanted to send a messenger to Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. So he sent a messenger to Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. The messenger came and said to Zuhair, Zuhair, Imam al-Hussein wants to see you. Zuhair came back into the tent. When he came back into the tent, he was wandering around the tent. His wife looked at him. She said to him, Zuhair, what's wrong? Please tell me. He said to her, it's nothing. She said to him, no, tell me, what's wrong? He said to her, Hussein, son of Ali, has asked to see me, and I'm not sure about what to do. The answer she gives is an answer that sends shivers down the spine of the lover of Fatima al-Zahra. She looks at him in his eyes and she says, the son of Fatima al-Zahra calls you, and you are here next to me. The son of Rasulullah calls you, and you remain here next to me. He turned around to her. He was about to leave. He said to her, I know he wants me to join him at Karbala. She said to him, and you doubt whether it's right to join him. Isn't this man the grandson of the man who bought the religion? But she said a line to him just before he left the tent. She said to him, oh Zuhair, if you're going to go with Aba Abdullah, go. But can I request something from you? He said to her, go ahead. What's the request? She said to him, tell Zainab, if they are caught as prisoners at Karbala, can I join them as one of the prisoners? As in, I don't want to be left alone. I know that you may end up being killed, but do you mind that I am also amongst the prisoners? Tell Zainab. Zuhair ibn al-Qayn, my dear brothers and sisters, when he joined Imam al-Hussein, he began to cry by Aba Abdullah. Then on the 10th of Muharram, when he went out to fight, on the night of the 10th of Muharram, Sayyida Zainab was looking at Imam al-Hussein. She said, are you sure these companions are ready to fight alongside you? Zuhair heard this, he began to cry. He then came to Imam al-Hussein later. He said to Aba Abdullah, Ya Aba Abdullah, if they cut my body into 1,000 pieces and I was resurrected 1,000 times, I would be honored to die 1,000 times for you and for your grandfather. Aba Abdullah hugged Zuhair ibn al-Qayn, and that's why the narrations mention that he fought one of the most valiant fights at Karbala. He killed 120 from the opposition, until at the end they surrounded him and they absolutely massacred his body. And on the 10th of Muharram, he's the only man who, when he died, Aba Abdullah raised his hands and said, Ya Allah, raise his killers as pigs on the day of judgment. I love Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. I cannot bear to see the way that they've just massacred him there on the plains of Karbala. That was Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. Then there was another wife, but her story is different. The wife of Wahab al-Kalbi. Wahab, his wife, they had just got married, and they were both Christian. And they had got married. When Imam al-Hussein was passing Wahab's mother's house, Wahab was standing outside. He saw Imam al-Hussein. He said, "Who are you?" He said, "I am Hussein." He said, "Hussein, son of who?" He said, "Hussein, son of Ali, son of Abu Talib." He said to him, "Where are you heading?" He said, "I'm heading towards a battlefield. I have to fight against the injustice of our time. There's an oppressive ruler and he's not giving rights to anyone." Wahab looked at him and he said to him, "May God help you in your task." Wallah, when he returned home, as soon as he entered the house, his mother looked at him. She said to him, "Who were you speaking to?" He said to her, "I was speaking to Hussein." He said, "Which Hussein?" He said, "The son of Ali ibn Abi Talib." She said, "The son of Ali ibn Abi Talib?" He said to her, "Yes." She began to cry. He said to her, "Mom, why are you crying?" She said, "If it wasn't for the prayers of his father, you wouldn't be born." He began to cry. He said to her, "Mom, what do you mean?" She said, "Wahab, when I was pregnant, I faced a difficulty in my pregnancy. And your father was scared that if I gave birth to you, that either you were going to die or I was going to die. But as a Christian, he didn't know who to ask at the time. But he used to respect Ali ibn Abi Talib. So he went to Ali ibn Abi Talib and he said to him, Oh Ali, I'm a Christian and you are a Muslim, but I believe you are a man of God. So do you mind praying for my wife?" Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, you know, his heart is the greatest heart. "Ya Allah, allow us to be in Najaf soon, next to the grave of Amir al-Mu'mineen." For those of you who haven't been to Najaf, I pray that all of you visit that holy grave. She said that Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen at that moment, she narrates that he said to your father, he said, "Do not worry. You may be a Christian, but if you love God, we love God. I will pray for your wife that she has a child, and that your child is well." She said, "Wahab, go and help the son of Ali ibn Abi Talib." She said, "Wahab, I will not be proud of you unless you lose your life next to him." But brothers and sisters, Wahab had just got married. His wife said to him, "My husband, what's wrong?" He said, "I'm going to join the religion of Islam. And I want to join Ali's son." She said to him, "But we've just got married. Are you going to leave me?" He said to her, "Come with me." She said, "I don't want you to die." He said to her, "Do not worry. Heaven awaits us." She said, "I don't want you to die. You know, it's her right. This is her husband. 17 days they've been married." She said to him, "I don't want you to die." When they reached the 10th of Muharram, she was with him. The companions came out one by one. Habib, Muslim, Zuhair. They came out one by one. Then Wahab came out. He said, "Aba Abdullah, it's my turn." Imam al-Hussein said to him, "Wahab, you don't have to. Your wife. He said, "Aba Abdullah, may my mother be sacrificed for you." Just picture that dariha in Karbala. Those of you who haven't been, may Allah let you go. He came to bid farewell to his mom. His mom said, "I'm smiling today. My son joins the son of Fatima to Zahra." He's about to leave for the battlefield. As he's about to leave, his wife says, don't go. And he turns around to her and he says to her, I must go. She again calls back to him, Wahab, Wahab, don't go. He again replies back to her by saying to her, I must go. As he's walking towards the battlefield, his head is bowed towards the ground. She says to him again, I beg you, don't go. He replies to her, I must go towards the battlefield. At that moment, from the side of the camp of Imam al-Hussein, he hears a cry saying, Wahab, fight amongst the pure ones of Al-Muhammad. He's surprised. Why? He turns around and he says to her, you said to me not to go, not to go, not to go. Why have you changed your mind? This reply is one of the saddest replies. She says to him, Wahab, don't blame me. The tears of the children of Abu Abdullah are killing me. I see Ruqayya on one side, I see Sukaina on the other, but I see a six-month-old baby whose lips are dry without any water. He fights valiantly amongst the soldiers until they finally kill him. His wife doesn't want to leave him. She runs by his body. She cries by his body. Shimr bin al-Jawshan orders his slave to go and behead his wife. His wife and him are now lying next to each other. Shimr the Mal'oon, Umar bin Sa'ad pick up the head of Wahab. They throw his head to his mother. You know what his mother does? She throws the head back to them. She says to them, I wish I had more sons to give towards the son of Fatima al-Zahra. MashaAllah, may Allah bless these tears. But let's not forget Zuhair ibn al-Qayn. You know, on the night of the 11th of Muharram, you know, this narration, one of the scholars would narrate it, one of the maraji'. On the night of the 11th of Muharram, all the bodies lay on the ground in Karbala. All of these bodies lay with no protection. Then at that moment, Zuhair's wife, Daylam, she had a servant with her. Daylam called her servant. She said to the servant, oh servant, come here next to me. The servant came next to her. She said to her, take this cloth, go out and look for Zuhair. I want you to go and cover my husband's body. The servant went out towards the battlefield. The servant began to look around. Then the servant returned back to Daylam. Daylam looked at the servant. Daylam said, did you cover my husband's body? The servant said, no. Daylam said, why? She said, as I was about to cover the body of Zuhair, I saw the holy body of Abu Abdullah lying without any cover. So I walked towards the body of Abu Abdullah to cover his body with the cloth. Brothers, brothers and sisters, listen to the reply of Daylam. The poets give you the reply. Daylam says, Jazakallah khairu jaza. Then the poet says, she says, how dare I ask for my husband's body to be covered when the body of the son of Fatima al-Zahra lies alone. May Allah bless these tears. May Allah bless you. Raise your hands, my dear brothers and sisters. Raise your hands. Ya Allah, raise us with Muhammad and Al Muhammad. Allow us to be amongst the companions of Imam Sahib al-Zaman. Ya Allah, raise us with the Imam of our time. Ya Allah, give patience to the Imam of our time on a night like this when he remembers his grandfather, Imam al-Hussein. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with Surah Al-Fatiha, but before it, the loudest of your salawat. Allahumma salam.